I received several reminders this week that Christmas is not always tinsel and light. Not that I really needed such reminders. I keep up with the news, after all. I heard the reminder first in a NPR report early in the week about families whose Christmases were greatly diminished this year by the death of their children to gun violence. Such senseless violence is always hard, but especially when the victims are children, when their futures seemingly stretching out before them are snuffed out. More than 40,000 gun deaths in this country this year. 40,000. The second reminder came also by radio on Wednesday morning when I was in North Carolina. Well, I was in my car on the way from somewhere to somewhere else and heard the song Joni Mitchell sang, that different kind of Christmas song, the very same song I mentioned in a recent First Matters post. The song called River recounted a story of a broken relationship and a lost love, and it began as I quoted it before, "It's coming on Christmas. They're cutting down trees. They're putting up reindeer and singing songs of joy and peace. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on." Later that same afternoon, I was back in my office at the house, foraging through my Christmas files, looking for a newspaper clipping, yellowed by the years, a clipping I try to make a point to reread each Christmas season at some point. It was a column written by Edwin Roberts at Christmas time in 1976 for that splendid old newspaper, the National Observer. Roberts wrote about the high irony of the season in terms of the sadness it seemed to visit on so many. He shared some particular instances of the melancholy that hung heavily over the lives of those who faced Christmas alone, those whose Christmases were laced with painful memories, those whose gaiety was arrested by personal grief. Roberts closed his article on a note of hope and encouragement, but his essay seemed to me a quiet summation of the message I had heard on several fronts. It's one I try to remember every Christmas, which is that Christmas, for all its joy and wonder and peace, can be such a time of lonely and inescapable struggle for so many. It's important for the church to remember such things. This admixture of joy and sorrow, of fulfillment and foreboding, because it can be found even in the portion of Luke's gospel Barbara read for us this morning. Fast on the heels of the wonderful story of the shepherds running from the manger to tell all that they had seen and heard, Luke appends this story of Joseph and Mary bringing Jesus to the temple in Jerusalem to present him to the Lord, an act of purification. And there the family encounters that old man named Simeon and the prophet named Anna. In one of his books, the pastor novelist Frederick Buechner describes that encounter with Simeon this way. Years before, Simeon had been told he wouldn't die until he'd seen the Messiah with his own two eyes, and time was running out. When the moment finally came, one look through his cataract lenses was all it took. He asked if it would be all right to hold the baby in his arms, and they said, "Yes, go ahead, but be careful not to drop him." "Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace," Simeon said, "according to thy word, for mine eyes have seen thy salvation." The baby playing with the fringes of his beard as he spoke. Parents were pleased as punch, and so he blessed them too for good measure. But then something about the mother stopped him, and his expression changed. What he saw in her face was a long way off, but it was there so plainly he couldn't pretend. "This child," he said, is destined for the falling and rising of many in Israel, and a sword will pierce through your soul, he said. He would have rather bitten off his tongue than said it, but in that holy place he felt he had no choice. And then he handed back the baby to her and departed in something less than the perfect peace he dreamed of all those long years of his waiting. To be sure, there's an unmistakable romanticism that is built up across the years around Christmas. The symbols and the songs and the carols all work their magic, and our hearts are warmed and our spirits are lifted a bit, and we find ourselves beginning to hope that maybe things will work out all right after all, despite the chaos and the dismay all around us. And so much of that romanticism centers on the child asleep on the hay, on the hope and the wonder and the love connected with the birth of that child. In that sense, these words of Simeon may startle us into an unwanted realism. But what his words do more than anything else is demonstrate, I think, with inescapable clarity, the humanity of the Gospels and the intimate connection between the manger and the cross. This child of Christmas, this babe of Bethlehem, was born into a world of tragedy and pain and evil. No sooner was he born than his parents had to flee Herod's rage, had to become refugees fleeing danger, seeking asylum down in Egypt. They escaped with their lives, but scores of innocent children died at Herod's command in Bethlehem. Down the road from that little town of Bethlehem, Jesus met the hopes and fears of all the years again on a hill called Golgotha. Pain and grief, sadness, loss, evil, injustice, apathy, pride, Jesus experienced them all through his life. He suffered them all. He bore our pain and died our death and was buried with the weight of the world's iniquity and mortality. I wonder if Simeon and Anna could see all that coming. I wonder if Mary and Joseph saw it coming. At least one artist thought Mary did. The 17th century Spanish artist Francisco de Zurbarán painted a haunting portrait of Mary and her adolescent son, Jesus, in Nazareth. Artists sometimes simply see things that others of us do not. Zurbarán's painting depicts Mary as no other portrait I've seen, slouching in her seat, her sad and worried face turned toward her son, who is picking at a thorn in his finger, a whole crown of thorns resting on his lap. The original hangs in the Cleveland Museum of Art. We have offered you but a small reproduction in the bulletin, but perhaps enough to give you a sense of the scene. I first learned of that painting from a poem by Deborah Burnham called What Will Become of Him. She wrote, "When Gabriel told Mary she was so highly favored among women, how her son would not be hers alone but shared with God, she must have wondered how to raise a king, how to wash and feed one who, the angel said, would rule the house of Jacob evermore. While keeping his small fingers safe from spikes and hammers, she must have guessed at what had to come. While his busy father split a length of tree, she must have thought about the price of kingship, wondered if he'd stare across the drying hills and weep as he began to understand." Zurbarán knew this. He alone dared paint the Virgin slumped in a low chair, her robe disheveled, staring with a sadness beyond tears as her son, a prickly circlet in his lap, dug thorns from his calloused hands, hands made older than his beardless face by cutting wood and driving spikes, his gorgeous, placid face suffused by light from a source invisible to Mary that leaves her dark conjecture in the shadow of of her son's brief future. She only knows that something terrible will happen as she sits helpless inside her dark, perpetual, unknowing grief. Grief seems so out of place in this joyful season, seems such an intruder into the carols of light. But Zebron knew, as did Simeon, that this child would travel from manger to cross. Yet I would also wager that both Simeon and Zebron understood that neither the manger nor the cross contained the final word about this child. The final word about Jesus was not his remarkably unremarkable birth in Bethlehem, nor was that final word spoken at the cross of Golgotha. The final word, I believe, was the one spoken by the angel at the empty tomb on Easter morning. That fear not that is powerful enough to dispel all the darkness. Indeed, one might conclude that it was not a star, but perhaps the first hints of the Easter sunrise that shone down on that Bethlehem stable. The light shines in the darkness, said John, and the darkness has not overcome it. Now, there is still darkness, of course, and many people have known it and experienced it in these days. Children dying in border detention center, their parents wailing like Rachel, like the parents who lost their futures to Herod's wrath on the killing fields in Bethlehem. A government in disarray, teetering on the shaky foundations of lies and vengefulness. And closer to home, the numbers of those who slept last night on icy sidewalks within a few blocks of here. There is still the darkness. But the darkness we dare to proclaim will not have the final word. With resurrection eyes, one can see the darkness clearly for what it is, yet can see both the manger and the cross in different light. With resurrection eyes, even if we're having a difficult time making sense of this Christmas season, we can still see beyond the manger to the cross and recognize that the cross represented the ultimate bearing of all the burdens of our human experience. If not from all the hoopla of the season, then perhaps from such a vision, we can pull together a measure of genuine joy. A joy that has little to do with parties or presents. A joy that doesn't ask us to pack up all our cares and woes. A joy that understands what it is to long for a river to skate away on. And indeed begs us to come just as we are, laden with every kind of pain and sorrow and emptiness we feel. Asking us to come and celebrate the only kind of joy that can sustain us in a time such as this. The joy of Simeon, whose eyes beheld the promise of God despite the darkness he saw there as well. And then, buoyed by such a vision and confidence, perhaps we can be about offering a belated Christmas gift to others in their distress and their need. A gift that was suggested in that old National Observer newspaper article 42 years ago this week. In his column, Ed Roberts suggested that the only authentic gift we can ever bring to those beset by tragedy and sadness is simply the gift of love. The unexpected word, he said, affectionate and simply given. That may be the only perfect gift. Altogether fitting for Christmas and blessedly fortifying on any wintry day. The unexpected word, a word of kindness, perhaps, a word of acceptance, a word of forgiveness, or of hospitality, or of grace, a word we might speak. A word already spoken to us. And the word became flesh and dwelt among us. Emmanuel, God with us. God with us at the manger. God with us at the cross. Even here, even now, God with us. So the angel says once again, fear not. Fear not. Fear not.